Welcome to the Young Turks. It is a Friday. I'm supposed to be joyous, but there's a couple stories that have made me furious. So without further ado, go ahead and drop it. All right, more doors in the house. Jimmy Dore, good to see you, brother. And then Anna Kasparian is leading the proceedings for the whole 2 hours here. We do have an amazing set of stories for you guys. Later in the program, Donald Trump is working with Democrats apparently because he got his feelings hurt. He's unreal. Every part of every one of these stories is unreal. But Hannity, we might not get to. Anyway, how he humiliated Jeff Sessions is an amazing story. But the terrorism thing we're going to talk about now is, of course, heartbreaking as usual, etc. And then there's Trump's reaction. Okay, so we're going to get to that in a second. But the Chelsea Manning story has me in a blind rage. We're going to get to that in the next segment, so don't miss that. But Anna, go ahead and take it away.
All right. Authorities in London are referring to a bomb that was detonated on a London train as a terrorist attack. Now, at the moment, we don't have full details as to who perpetrated this incident or who the perpetrator is. However, fortunately, no one has died or is expected to die as a result of this bomb. However, 22 people have been injured. To give you more details, the Associated Press reports that the bomb went off around 8:30 a.m. as the train carrying commuters from the suburbs, including many school children, was at Parsons Green Station in the southwest of the city. One commuter who was on that train said, "I ended up squashed on the staircase. People were falling over, people fainting, crying. There were little kids clinging onto the back of me." Also, photos taken inside the train showed a white plastic bucket inside a foil-lined shopping bag with flames and what appeared to be wires emerging from the top. Now, just to give you a sense of how many people can fit on this train, according to reports, at capacity, the train could hold more than 800 people. So it is extremely lucky that no one is going to die as a result of this attack. And the injuries that people are dealing with are non-life threatening. People have burns, but they're expected to survive and recover.
All right, so there's one rare thing I agree with Donald Trump on, which is that these terrorists are losers. Partly thank God for that. So because there was a guy named Damon Smith who tried to do a bombing last year in a similar fashion, couldn't get the bomb to explode. Thank God, incompetent idiot loser. And in this case, thank God people were not killed, but they easily could have been. And they're losers also because they don't know how to effectuate change, whatever they think is change in their stupid minds. So they go the route of, let me just murder school children who are on this train, and that'll be my idea of what, getting something done. They're mad about something, and so murdering little kids is gonna make it better? No, it's not gonna make anything better. It's just that you're too stupid and you're too immoral and you're too sick to come up with anything else, but mainly stupid. I don't know who they are right now. Look, everybody's guessing the obvious, since there's been a lot of terrorist attacks in Europe involving Muslims and inside London and the UK as well. Most people are guessing Muslims, ISIS. And by the way, we just say ISIS blanket, but now Al-Qaeda apparently told people, and yes, they still exist. Yes, they're different than ISIS. Sometimes they even fight ISIS. It's a frickin' mess, right? They're all idiots and losers. Apparently Al-Qaeda told people to go bomb trains, so maybe it was inspired by Al-Qaeda. Either way, it comes to the same conclusion if it is in that direction. But even if it isn't, it's the same thing, whether it's like some other terrorist. I don't want to speculate on what other terrorist it is. It's people who in their minds were aggrieved, they think. And they thought the proper way to handle it was to murder other people. I mean, let's just note the irony of if it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS, we're really mad at the West for killing our folks. So we will show them by killing your folks. Well, that's what you were mad at in the first place. So it doesn't seem like you're making it very productive. I know it's as old as time. I know. Will you kill us, we kill you, and round we go until everybody's dead. But it hasn't worked throughout the history of mankind. It's not working now. It's not gonna get you anything. All it's gonna do is murder innocent kids. So, I mean, how can I be more outraged and more disgusted by this? And again, thank God they were stupid enough that they couldn't get it to work so that anybody died. And by the way, a lot of people could have died in the panic too as they were running away from it. Look, there's no good way of talking about it, because no matter what you say, these barbarians get more encouraged. Oh yeah, well next time I'm gonna make the bomb better. Oh for God damn it, right? And hey, they just what they're actually doing is looking for glory. Oh, I'm gonna be the glorious guy who, you know, partook in this war and jihad or whatever else they had in their head, and whether it's the neo-Nazis here in Charlottesville or the ISIS in all over Europe. Oh, and I'm going to, everybody's gonna talk about me and I'm gonna be the hero. Nobody's a hero for murdering little kids. You're just a loathsome prick who's too stupid to figure out how to do anything else.
All right, let's move on to another portion of this story. As of now, there are still many unanswered questions in regard to the terror attack in London. This is regarding the terror attack that has injured 22 individuals. Luckily, there have been no fatalities. Now, even though nothing is confirmed in terms of who decided to detonate this homemade bomb inside a London train, Donald Trump has already tweeted about this. He tweeted immediately and has already speculated in terms of who carried out this attack. I'll give you the examples. He tweeted, another attack in London by a loser terrorist. These are sick and demented people who were in the sights of Scotland Yard, must be proactive.
Let's just pause there. Let's break down each tweet. So as I said in the earlier story, I actually think, I know it sounds goofy calling them loser terrorists, I actually think that it's perfectly fine because they want to be winners. They want to be glory, they want to get glory and honor. And if you just ridicule them and call them to what they are, which is losers, and that's, they couldn't accomplish anything in their lives. So they had to go to violence and destruction to do it. It might seem a little childish to some of us, but I don't think so. I think it's a fine thing to say. Now, as I read the rest of the tweet, I was like, wait, you're saying Scotland Yard's on it. There's no way, the first time I read it, I was like, there's no way that Scotland Yard already wanted to announce something. Unless they already caught the guys, but I already read that they didn't catch the guys yet.
Right.
So I was like, oh God damn it, did you leak, did you accidentally give out classified information again, you knucklehead? And then I go to Scotland Yard's statement on it, they're like, We do not want to talk about who we might or might not be tracking. In other words, the idiot US president once again gave information he shouldn't have given. And then the last sentence there is, what was it, Anna?
These are sick.
Must be proactive. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you mean that we, Scotland Yard and our authorities should be proactive in tracking terrorists, of course they should be proactive. If you mean proactive in what? And then later he's gonna talk about the travel ban. Proactively targeting all innocent people in a certain category, then no, you would be wasting Scotland Yard's resources when they should be tracking leads so that they can stop bombings like this. Well, then again, unfortunately, we're back to you being an idiot.
All right, so he continues on with, loser terrorists must be dealt with in a much tougher manner. The internet is their main recruitment tool, which we must cut off and use better.
Okay, wait, this is way worse. Okay, you wanna deal with terrorists in a tougher manner. First of all, we have the death penalty in America, so we can execute them. Tougher how? Okay, now that's in the UK. They don't have death penalty, but their maximum punishment is life in prison, and they're presumably working as hard as they possibly can. No, he doesn't mean that. He means tougher as in, don't target that terrorist who did that, target other people that didn't do it, like my stupid Muslim ban. Or tougher as in, go bomb more random places in the Middle East. Why don't you go and seek justice for the people who actually did this? Okay, but the second part is much worse. The internet is what they use, so we got to stop it. What? Oh no, 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 no. What are you going to do? Like now he's going to come up with regulations. First of all, I thought you were against regulations. Now, in regulations to what? Stop free speech on the internet? Or better use the internet? What the hell does better use the internet mean?
I know, but look, obviously that kind of statement is incredibly dangerous for anyone who believes in a free and open internet. And I would be more concerned if I thought of Trump as someone who thinks anything through. He doesn't think anything through. He doesn't even have a real political ideology, which is the reason why he's jumping from one political party to the other at the moment, which is frustrating a lot of Republicans in Congress. But you know, he just says things without thinking about the ramifications. Obviously, that can be extremely dangerous, especially when he's unwittingly leaking classified information pertaining to an investigation on a terrorist attack. But in this case, okay, he's saying this, but he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't have any real thought process behind it. He's just not fit to be president. He doesn't think about anything he does before he does it. He doesn't think about anything he says before he says it.
And if you're, I'm sorry, Annie, you're 1000% right. If you're a right winger out there right now watching this online, you really want him to, as he said, quote, cut off the internet. Do you know what that means? Nobody knows what that means. Trump doesn't know what it means. And if he actually means it, I mean, let's assume he's stupid or a liar, like you probably assume the same exact thing. But if he meant it and you believe in your beloved Trump and he's gonna cut off the internet, do you think that's a good idea? You live on the internet, right? You use the internet. That's so preposterous and stupid. And it goes along the same lines as the Muslim ban. Let's not get the guy who actually did it. Let's just cut off the internet for everybody. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Let's not go get the guy who did it. Instead, let's ban random people from Yemen or Sudan.
Right. And also, the internet can be a great tool for intelligence communities who are hyper focused on monitoring extremists rather than indiscriminately collecting metadata on everyone.
I gotta say one more thing about that. If I'm the president, whether it was Obama or Trump, I'm furious at our intelligence services because Al Qaeda has a magazine. Jesus Christ, it's called Inspire Magazine. Very inspirational, and they talk about how, and they recently put out a thing saying do bombings on trains, and here we have a bombing on a train, right? You can't track their magazine online. You can't track their tweets and figure out who the hell is saying it, and then target them and get them. And we got them, their leaders running around, and it's decade after decade. What the hell do we have intelligence for? What, to randomly spy on us, to do warrantless searches of Americans and not actually catch the bad guys? I wouldn't be going out there wasting the time of the intelligence services on blanket, okay, go scour the entire internet or 1.6 billion Muslims. I'd be like, get me the sons of bitches that are putting this message out. You can't track from Al Qaeda has better tech than we do. I'd fire everybody in the intelligence community and I'd go hire the best tech guys in the world. I would do whatever I need to do to find out where the hell these guys are that are bombing us. That would be a good use of the intelligence services, and the fact that they haven't demanded that of them is disgraceful.
All right, so the tweets get worse because he hasn't yet speculated in terms of who the terrorists are, but he's about to do so. So the travel ban into the United States should be far larger, tougher, and more specific. But stupidly, that would not be politically correct. Okay, so I want to stop for a second with this tweet especially because, all right, look, I get it. I think it's fair to speculate that the person who carried out or the people who carried out this attack are Muslim extremists. However, as the president, you shouldn't speculate. You should wait until you get the facts and then go ahead and make your statement. And look, if you disagree with that point that I just made, just keep in mind Donald Trump's reaction or non-reaction to Heather Heyer getting murdered at that hate rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then when he got criticized for delaying a reaction and then refusing to condemn the white supremacists, here's what his excuse was. Let's take a look.
Here's the thing. When I make a statement, I like to be correct. I want the facts. This event just happened. In fact, a lot of the event didn't even happen yet as we were speaking. This event just happened. Before I make a statement, I need the facts. So I don't want to rush into a statement. So making the statement when I made it was excellent.
Okay, so where are the facts? Because again, for a regular average Joe to, you know, speculate among friends, that's one thing, and that's fine. And I get the urge to speculate. But you are the president of the United States. And so you can't have a double standard when it comes to an American getting murdered by a white supremacist in our own country. Okay.
So it's a great point by Anna. Let's just quickly review. And again, I agree with you, Anna. We're talk show hosts. We're allowed to speculate. So we think it's likely Muslim extremists because Al-Qaeda asked people to do that kind of specific attack. It's happened before, and it is. Now, but we obviously are open-minded that it might not be. Because there's other kinds of terrorists in the world. There's other kind of right-wing terrorists. Left-wing terrorists usually go after like animal farms or whatever they're doing. Anyway, so open mind, fine. Okay, but you're the president, and you just told us that the standard was no. I mean, if there's terrorists and Charlottesville was an act of domestic terrorism, according to the Justice Department, etc., that you have to wait a couple of days and get all of your facts. But in this case, it was just a couple of hours. And Scotland Yard said, please don't put out a statement. Theresa May had to say, no one should put out a statement if they don't have all the facts, meaning like Donald Trump, shut up, right?
Yeah.
So instead, he thinks it's Muslim, so he jumps right in it. And Donald Trump, are you gonna say, well, they're good people on both sides? Are you gonna say that about this? But when it was domestic terrorism about our country, remember, you're our president. Our country, and someone got murdered, good people on both sides. He is so despicable.
Well, the only thing I would say, and I mean, you're covering it very good. I just would say that, you know, how do we handle this now? We react exactly the same. I like what you said, you know, we're the only ones under surveillance. Why do we have all the surveillance if we can't find these guys? They have a magazine. That's a great point. We just, the United States government just decided to spend $100 billion more on defense than they spent last year. $100 billion more. So are we gonna use that money exactly the same way? Yes. Now, is there a way, what would be better to stop terrorism? What are the root causes of terrorism? Nobody ever talks about the root causes of terrorism in the way they should talk about it. So right now, there's 7 million people who don't know where their next meal is coming from in Yemen. Because of, and there was 13,000 civilians killed in 1 year from March 2015 to March 2016. That's the Allied bombing campaign killed 13,000 civilians in that. So
why are we fighting Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen?
Exactly.
Why are we doing that?
Petrodollar. Right? That's why we're there.
That's exactly right. And so when Yemen is facing famine and innocent family members, children getting murdered on our watch because of our actions. You think that, you know, that leads to love toward the United States or the Western world, right? Look, and so people will take that and say, you're making excuses for the terrorists.
No.
But that's not making excuses for the terrorists. Those terrorists who carry out those actions need to be brought to justice, right? But you also have to take a step back and think about whether or not our foreign policy has been working. And it is not working. It is draining our resources. It is killing our soldiers and members of our militaries. It's killing countless civilians abroad.
Bankrupting our treasury.
So my
point is, what if we were to take that $100 billion that we don't need to spend, which we're spending just because it's a giveaway to the military industrial complex, and we tried to actually help people in Yemen instead of trying to kill them at the behest of Saudi Arabia? Maybe that would be, I think that's a better anti-terrorism tactic than to keep trying to blow up people who are poor and desperate. Yeah.
So let me comment further on that. First of all, this is part of the problem of corruption. So you say, wait, what does corruption have to do with this? Because we allow legalized bribery in America, and so what do defense contractors do? Well, they want $100 billion extra, so they go and bribe almost all of our politicians. And by the way, they also put ads on television, even though they don't sell anything to consumers. Well, why do they have ads on TV? Can you buy a multi-billion-dollar jet? No, you can't do it, or a aircraft carrier? No, but they have ads, millions of dollars ads anyway, because what they're doing is they're buying TV's compliance. And so it's not an accident that you have vapid people like Joe Scarborough on TV. He's paid to be stupid. So he goes on there and famously said, when they were trying to figure out why sometimes we're attacked by Muslim radicals, he said, oh, they hate us because they hate us.
Yep.
And he repeated it three times. Oh, that was his genius conclusion. His intellect and scholarly work led him to conclude that they hate us because they hate us, they hate us because they hate us. Well, I mean, who would pay someone to say such a stupid thing to a national audience? Well, the people who think, don't tell them the truth, don't actually try to solve the problem. Just put on a bunch of idiots who will go, hey, if you're trying to find out the root cause of terrorism, instead of saying, oh, that's great, so we can stop terrorism, no, we're going to yell at you and say, oh, are you trying to blame both sides? Are you trying to say that it's our fault? No, we are America, and everything we do is wonderful and perfect, and they hate us because they hate us. I don't want to figure it out. I don't want to figure it out. I would like to be proactively stupid like Joe Scarborough. That is what they get paid for, to be stupid. So let's not make that mistake. So if you actually think about it for a second, why do we have radical Islam running around? I don't want to get into the whole dissertation on it, but you should go back and watch the video I did explaining how the goddamn Saudis funded media and changed the culture all across the Muslim world and went towards radicalism and towards violence because of their Wahhabi strain of Islam. That was not dominant Islam until the Saudis paid for media all across the world. And who helped them? The United States. Do you know why we did it? Not because we're malicious and bad guys, etc. No, black and white world does not exist in either direction, okay? No, we did it because we thought, hey, if we radicalize Muslims, and they will be more devout and fight the godless communists, because we were in the middle of the Cold War. And then we said, oh my God, they're atheists, those damn Soviet Union, the communists, go get them, become more religious. And not just more religious and help the poor and the needy. No, no, no. Religion means you should pick up a gun and fire at the Soviets. So we helped the Saudis spread that poison throughout the world. And guess what happened? It blew up in our face. Yes, the Soviet Union's gone, now they're attacking us. And instead of figuring out, hey, ooh, maybe that was a bad idea. Maybe we shouldn't have done that intervention. Maybe we shouldn't have spread that ideology. Maybe we shouldn't have also given them weapons, which then a guy named Osama bin Laden, who we helped and funded and supported in Afghanistan, that's a fact, then turned around and used it against us. Maybe you think the lesson from that is, don't get into and fund them and give them weapons in the first place. Maybe Jimmy's right, that we could actually learn from history. So what is the most successful plan the United States has ever done in foreign policy? The Marshall Plan. Everyone knows it, but no one in TV will talk about it. None of the think tanks talk about it. None of the politicians talk about it. But that's part of what made America great. That's why people loved us, because we took two countries that we were in a disaster, the biggest war in history. One had Nazis, the other one attacked us at Pearl Harbor. Our biggest enemies, some of the worst scoundrels, most evil enemies in the history of mankind. And we turned them into our top allies. Jesus Christ, that is amazing. It's the most amazing accomplishment, I would argue, perhaps in human history. And people say, I'm getting too jingoistic about America. But I do, I believe in America. I believe in that idea. I believe we can do that. But in order to do that, we have to think. And we have to actually get beyond the corruption. Because all of these so-called think tanks and the politicians and the media are funded by the same people. And they are funded to create more war, more conflict, not to solve the conflict and not to solve the wars. So when we get bombed by terrorists, unfortunately, that's not a mistake, that's not a oops, golly gee, how did that happen? It perpetuates the cycle of violence, which makes some people billions of dollars. It is sick, and that is how it happens. And if we don't get rid of the corruption, it is going to happen for time immemorial. So we gotta go to the root cause. We have got to stop letting private interests finance our elections. If you let defense contractors finance elections, of course you're gonna have more war. And by the way, more terrorism, because it helps them bring out more war.
You know, they used to have terror. They had terrorism from the IRA in the UK, right? So that, now, how did they solve that? Did they kill all of them?
They tried for a while, Jimmy. You know what? It turned out that that didn't work.
That didn't work. They couldn't kill all of them?
No, they couldn't. And in fact, you know that in the height of the IRA terrorism in the 1970s, they had 5 times as much terrorism in Europe as they do today. And but I know why. It's because the Irish are,
because they're Muslims.
That's exactly it. The Irish, by their very nature, are irredeemable, and it is their texts and it is their religion,
their canon law,
and their Sharia law, their canon law, and you cannot help the Irish. That's why they did so much more terrorism than Muslim radicals do today. It is in their nature. Oh shit! It wasn't. That wasn't true. It turns out you can do smart things to stop terrorism. And what did we do? We did a peace deal. We did a peace deal. Nobody ever learns. Okay, Jimmy Carter is derided by all of the establishment as, oh, that loser president couldn't get anything done. Who's the only person who's ever actually gotten peace in the Middle East, which we hear is impossible? Jimmy Carter. He did a peace deal with Israel and their worst enemy, Egypt. That was their biggest and most deadly enemy. You know how much Egypt and Israel has fought since then? Zero, nothing. They have not fought at all. Because Jimmy Carter actually was smart, cared, got us a peace deal. Peace deals work. But they're not just stupid on TV, they're paid to be stupid.
We gotta take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, the story that has Cenk enraged. You don't wanna miss it.
If you thought, yeah, I mean, this had me enraged, that also has me enraged.
Yeah, it's their fault.
Yeah, all right, welcome back, Young Turks, Jimmy Dore, Cenk and Anna here. So, all right, let's just do, I forgot to check your tweets, I'm in such a rage. Okay, so Anna, let's do the story.
All right. Harvard University has rescinded its invitation to Chelsea Manning as a visiting fellow. Now, visiting fellows are individuals who visit the campus and attend several different events, sometimes on the same day, sometimes through a series of days, in order to be part of discussions relevant to their expertise. Now, the reason why they decided to rescind Chelsea Manning's invitation is because there were establishment types, particularly people like CIA Director Mike Pompeo, who took action against Harvard because of the fact that they decided to hire Chelsea Manning as a visiting fellow. Now, Mike Pompeo was supposed to appear for a speaking engagement. He canceled it. And then also Mike Morrell, who is an ex-CIA chief, just decided to resign from Harvard as a result of Chelsea Manning being invited. Now, let me give you more details. Apparently, the dean is the individual who made the decision to scrap Chelsea Manning from the events. The Harvard University Institute of Politics invitation for Chelsea Manning to serve as a visiting fellow for the 2017-2018 academic year, he says, was a mistake and is being withdrawn. And again, this is the dean of the John F. Kennedy School of Government. He released this statement on Friday today. He also continues to say, I now think that designating Chelsea Manning as a visiting fellow was a mistake for which I accept responsibility. Therefore, we are withdrawing the invitation to her to serve as a visiting fellow and the perceived honor that it implies to some people, while maintaining the invitation for her to spend a day at the Kennedy School and speak in the forum.
Wow, thank you so much. That's so generous of you. You're allowed, is she allowed to go on campus? Is she allowed to walk through Harvard Yard? Thank you so much. All right, let me go to war here. So I can't believe they did this. And maybe it's because I'm naive. But okay. At least we now know Harvard's true colors. So Harvard is a member of the establishment, I get it. So a lot of people say, of course, Cenk, are you crazy? So they think they would rather kowtow to the CIA, they would rather do propaganda for the CIA than actually speak truth to power. So at least you know what Harvard's about now. It's a fraud, it's not a learning institution, it's an establishment institution that gives you propaganda. So now we know. Honestly, I've lost all respect for Harvard. And so you might think, oh, really, did you have any respect? No, I had tremendous respect. I went and spoke at Harvard, and I was proud that I spoke at Harvard. And I got T-shirts for my kids and I wanted them to go to Harvard one day. I don't anymore. And so if all you're going to teach them is to bow their head to the powerful and to kick the powerless, I want no part of that institution, and neither should you. So look, there's a lot to say about this, but I want to tell you about a petition we're doing right now, okay?
Before you do so, though, I think this information is really relevant to get people fired up about the petition. Now, there are other visiting fellows that were invited to speak alongside Chelsea Manning, okay? Those people have not been disinvited, and I would argue that those people are actually much more questionable than Chelsea Manning is. Quickly, that includes Hillary Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook.
Mook, but you know, to be fair, Robbie is like so accomplished. The way that he lost to Donald Trump, it was amazing. Boy, I'd like to learn from his dumbass. I mean, what a waste of the students' time that you're going to bring that loser into campus to teach kids how to lose to a guy who was at 37% in the polls on election day. The guy who was the least popular person to ever run for president, Robbie Mook found a way to lose to them. Oh no, Chelsea Manning risked everything so that Americans can know what their government's up to. But you should strip her of any privilege or honor or anything along those lines, so you can give it to Robbie Mook, who could tell people, oh, run an establishment candidate and a campaign and find a way to lose to a monster. Great work, Harvard. Okay, right, who else?
So, did they have the captain of the Titanic also?
Former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer.
Oh, great.
These are quality
honorable
people.
Honorable.
There's a lot to learn from them.
Former Donald Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski.
Ben. Okay, now Corey, he can teach the Harvard students how to assault reporters. Remember, he got partly fired. He was so incompetent, so grotesque, Donald Trump fired him. Okay? And not for, hey, you did, like, for incompetence and assault. That's what Lewandowski got fired for from the Trump campaign. Oh, but Trump has power. So as long as you have power, Harvard will bow down to you.
That's right.
Truth, learning, bravery, who cares? Who cares? But Lewandowski's, he got power with Donald Trump, and Sean Spicer briefly worked for him as a jackass who refused to answer any questions and attacked the press nonstop. That's who's going to teach the kids at Harvard. But Chelsea Manning, who risked her life, who risked everything to let Americans know what we were actually doing, no, it's time to kick her to the curb. It's disgusting what Harvard has done.
It's disgusting what they did to Chelsea Manning, the disservice that they're doing to their students. And just to be clear, I don't believe, and I don't think anyone on this panel believes, that those other visiting fellows should be disinvited, regardless of, you know, whether or not you agree or disagree with what they've done in their careers. You're supposed to have an open forum, an exchange of ideas on this college campus. And just because two people from the intelligence community, or used to be from the intelligence community, can't handle what Chelsea Manning did, they've decided to essentially scrap her fellowship. It's ridiculous. But anyway, let's now get to that.
Okay, so the petition is, I will not have any affiliation with Harvard or provide any support for it whatsoever if they do not reverse their disgraceful decision on Chelsea Manning, tytnetwork.com/Harvard. Now, this is important, guys, because I know what the skeptics will say. Oh, really, were you guys about to do something with Harvard? Yes, I've been invited to speak at Harvard before, and if they invite me now, it's a blanket no, hell no, no interest, okay? And if you're out there and Harvard has asked you to speak, say no. If you're applying to Harvard, don't do it. There's 1,000 great schools in this country. Go to Stanford, go to Princeton, go to Yale, but don't go to Harvard. Harvard's going to teach you how to bow your head. Harvard's apparently going to teach you how to suck up to the powerful. What a gross thing for kids to learn. So if you're a Harvard alumni, and we have the single most educated audience in the world, it's not an exaggeration. I have the demographics to prove it. Nearly 80% with a college education on our audience at scale. So you think there's not Harvard alumni in the audience? I get it. A lot of the alumni who are 85 who weren't smart to begin with, they got in there because their daddy got them in, are going to go, oh yes, wonderful. Yes, Chelsea Manning, no good. Yes, let's maintain power for the CIA and everyone else. Okay, that's fine. But Harvard also has a lot of alumni at 25 and 35 and 45. So when I say I will not support Harvard anymore, you should make sure to tell them I will not give you another dime if this is what Harvard stands for. And what I want you to do, because I will publicize it, is send them letters and CC us. Send them emails and CC us, and we'll publicize it for you. So our email is feedback@tytnetwork.com, okay? Feedback@tytnetwork.com. Just CC us. And if you're a Harvard alumni, say, I'm not going to campus anymore. I'm not giving you another dollar. If you're invited to Harvard, don't go. And if it's they're trying to court you for early admission, go to Stanford. It's any of those schools. But if they're going to teach my kids that the best thing to do is to suck up to people like Corey Lewandowski and Mike Pompeo, and to kick down people who served years in prison, who, by the way, were also, according to courts, tortured by us, Chelsea Manning was, and because she had the audacity to believe in democracy and to believe in the American people, if that's what Harvard teaches, I want no piece of that. I'm going to throw out those Harvard shirts for my kids. We're not going to apply. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll learn from it. And if they say, yeah, no, we're not going to learn anything. We learned that you serve the government if you're at Harvard and you serve the powerful. Okay, great. Then don't. Then that's fine. At least we know where you stand.
So I just want to remind people of who Harvard actually gave into, who they caved in. They didn't cave into the Red Cross or Planned Parenthood or the Catholic Church. They gave into people who kill, murder, and overthrow democratically elected governments before breakfast. That's who they just caved into. They caved into people who we have a torture report about that Barack Obama sealed for 12 years. The Senate took 2 years putting together a torture report. These are the guys who ordered war crimes and then carried them out. That's who the CIA is. In fact, this all started because Mike Morrell, former ex-CIA head, he resigned over this. Do you know who Mike Morrell is? Mike Morrell, he didn't actually carry out torture. He defended torture. That's almost worse. Instead of when it came to light, trying to get rid of it, he defended it, meaning it'll happen again. He's a war crime defender. He's a war crime enabler. That's who he is. He also defended the drone bombing, which kills mostly innocent people. And so who did they bend to? They bent to murderers. They bent to the cretins of our society. Against who? Whistleblowers who showed the utmost courage. So you know what I would like to go and talk to on Harvard, all their literature professors who read all those books about this exact kind of thing, and they teach it to their students about how the machine crushes whistleblowers. Oh, by the way, we do that too at Harvard. That's who we are. We're empty cretins of a college university because we just bent to the most disgusting, sick, warmongering, torture carrying out people in the world. These are the people who we should be teaching our students to not be like, to not have on our campus. You want to keep somebody off your campus? How about the guy who runs a spy ring, who spies on our own citizens, who tries to deceive their own country? That's who the CIA is. That's who they're in bed with. That's who they just bowed to. Torturers and murderers.
Daniel Ellsberg was a whistleblower and is now considered an American hero. Chelsea Manning is a whistleblower. And Ellsberg didn't go to prison. Chelsea Manning went to prison for a long time. She served a huge part of her sentence. And she was willing to take all that on so we know what we did. One of the things, she released many things that let us know that the American government, including the CIA, was lying to us. They knew how many civilians they had killed, but were hiding it. But now we know that because of Chelsea Manning. One of the other things was the Apache helicopter video where we shot and murdered journalists, and then we shot and murdered first responders. The people who shot and murdered those people didn't get a single day in prison. Chelsea Manning served time for letting the American people in a democracy know what they did. So that is an American hero. And you disinvited her and said that that you didn't want to bestow an honor through a title to Chelsea Manning, and you did it because of pressure from the guys at the CIA who hid information, that same exact information from the American people that we had a right to know when we make decisions about whether we go to war or don't go to war. Okay, well, if Harvard doesn't rethink this, they have announced to the world that they are supplicants of power and sad, yes, sad little creatures who raise and educate kids to bow their heads,
wow,
and serve, wow, the establishment. It is really, really disheartening. By the way, you think the smartest kids in the country go to Harvard? And some of them absolutely do. But 30% of Harvard is legacy admissions. daddy went to Harvard, mommy went to Harvard, so I got into Harvard. But people would like to kill affirmative action, but 30% of Harvard students are got in because of their daddies and mommies. So let's see, so okay, we know what Harvard is.
But how many times have we seen in literature that it's not intelligence that's necessary? What's necessary is courage, right? And right now, what Harvard's doing is probably the most cowardly act I've seen a university ever do.
One last thing. If you have any sense at all, and you're a dean or someone in a position, decision-making role at one of these other universities, one of the Ivies, Duke, Stanford, or any of the other great schools, invite Chelsea Manning to be a visiting fellow. It's a layup. You know what you'll have? You'll have great respect from actual millennials who think Chelsea Manning is 1,000 times more courageous than Trump's director of the CIA. So all the Ivies out there, Princeton, Penn, etc. And if you're not an Ivy like Stanford or Duke, but you're a great school, what are you waiting for? Why don't you embarrass Harvard and have all the smart, courageous kids go to your school instead?
All right, we got to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, more stories, including the real reason why Trump is now working with the Democrats.
All right, back on the Young Turks, lots to do, so just a couple comments here. Karen Ola says, I think from yesterday on YouTube Super Chat, you're looking, grabbing a couple of billion views sharp today, Cenk. Nice threads, thank you. I hope I could keep it going today. You liked the yesterday's looks too, right?
Yeah. No, you've been killing it. You've been killing it
lately. Thank you, I appreciate it. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying, or you guys are saying, thank you. Isabel Laterno writes in, good point by Jimmy, as long as you fight terrorism with guns, you will not win, but reaching out could be the solution. And so I know that, because we're like, oh, we can reach out to terrorists. No, not reach out to the guys who are already terrorists. Reach out to other human beings so we can change the culture and head in the right direction instead of the wrong direction. Okay, Gabby writes in, fun fact, governing board of Harvard University is the Harvard Corporation. Make no mistake, this was a corporate decision. And yes, there are a lot of alumni out there who give a ton of money to Harvard's trust fund. Not trust fund, it's fund, anyway. And they want Harvard to be conservative. And they said, we're not gonna give you money unless you go in a conservative direction, right? And they are obsessed with that fund. It is now, I lost track of it, I think it's at over $10 billion now. Mm-hmm. Now, does that help them cut tuition, eliminate tuition, cut tuition? No, not really. Could they? Yeah, they could. They're not gonna do that. Right. No. They're just gonna grow the fund. So that's why I'm saying, you hit them where it hurts. If you start withdrawing money from Harvard, all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute. Oh my God, this money, now I'm paying attention, okay?
You know what would have been courageous for Mike Pompeo to do? Actually fighting ideas, right? Yeah. Debating ideas. Like, that's what I would argue an adult would do. So if I were going to participate in a speaking engagement at a university and someone with an opposing point of view were to come on that campus, my reaction isn't to be like, I'm not gonna show up anymore. I am so offended. No, okay, I obviously have strong feelings about this. And if I'm confident in what I believe and what I've researched, then I would want to sit down and debate those ideas. That's something that should take place in an educational setting, right? But instead, you know, you have this ridiculous situation where people, like, they're just afraid to talk to each other. They're afraid to have that debate.
By the way, we did a show at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government for Fusion. And we did a live show there. If I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do it. Okay, all right, let's go to the next story.
All right. All of a sudden, Donald Trump seems to be very cozy with some Democrats, specifically Democratic leadership like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. In fact, just yesterday, he announced that he came to a, you know, negotiation or a deal with the Democrats in regard to DACA and what to do moving forward. And of course, Republicans are furious about this, including his base. Now, why? Why is he working with Democrats all of a sudden? Well, here's the official reason that he gave. Take a look.
What do you say to Republicans who are looking at your outreach to Democrats and saying, what's going on here?
I'm a Republican. Republican through and through, but I'm also finding that sometimes to get things through, it's not working that way. And, you know, we got very poorly treated on the health care plan, and now you see what's happening where people are going single payer, exactly what I said would happen. And single payer would be a terrible thing for our country. But we have to get things passed. And if we can't get things passed, then we have to go a different route.
Okay, so that's sounds like, all right, he's frustrated with Republicans, but maybe he's realizing in order to get things done, you have to reach across the aisle. You need to actually negotiate and come up with deals that way. But no, it turns out that he's actually pretty furious with Republicans who refuse to agree with him or Republicans who just aren't afraid of him. Republicans like Senator Susan Collins, who refused to vote in favor of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. John McCain, who refused to vote in favor of the Republican plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. And so we have those little tidbits. And then all of a sudden, Costa, what's his name? Jim Costa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of a sudden Jim Costa.
No, Robert Costa in that case, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
There's Jim Acosta and Robert Costa.
Yes, sorry, I mixed them up, which is, anyway.
Understandable.
All right, so.
Robert Costa always looks to me like the real Robert Costa didn't show up, but his little brother is trying to fake it. He just looks like that to me. I don't know why that is.
Okay, sorry for getting a little derailed. But Robert Costa all of a sudden tweets something that I think is very relevant to this story. He also pointed to a June 27th Washington Post article he co-wrote, which Trump apparently hated. And the title of that was, "Who's Afraid of Trump? Not Enough Republicans, At Least For Now."
Okay, so let's break this down. He's a child. So look, if you're a Republican, hear me out. So and let me give credit to a Fox News host, Chris Wallace. And I saw him say this, and it was a really good point. He's like, look, if he's trying to put pressure on the Republicans, hey, you better do a deal with me, otherwise I'm gonna go to the Democrats and do a deal with them. He's like, okay, there's some logic in it. And I agree with that. I believe in playing hardball in politics. He said, but to what end? Great question. Okay, so think it through. So if you say, hey, Trump is saying, hey, if you're asking for too much in tax cuts, Republicans, I'm gonna go strike a deal with the conservative Democrats. I'm still gonna get tax cuts, but I'm gonna get $2 trillion in tax cuts instead of the $7 trillion you're asking for, because I can't pass the $7 trillion because you're being unreasonable. So I'm gonna do this instead, and I'm gonna get something accomplished. Okay, that would be a fair way to do it. I think that makes sense. Now, I would hate that. I don't want the conservative Democrats to work with them. I don't want any tax cuts, but I would understand that strategy. But instead here, he's saying, oh yeah, Republican, I'm mad at you. Why aren't you just scared of me? So I'm gonna go work with the Democrats and I'm gonna pass their priorities. Now, I'm very happy about that. Okay, good, keep the dreamers in the country and don't build a wall. I'm thrilled with that conclusion. But to what end? What did you accomplish? So he has no ideology.
No ideology.
Yes.
He has no principles.
Yes.
He doesn't care.
Yes.
So if you say to him, kick out all the dreamers, keep all the dreamers, he is indifferent. So he's like, I just want to make a deal. Who am I making a deal with? And who's fluffing me and who's not fluffing me? Oh, you guys aren't, you know, scared of me. Or, oh, Chuck, come on, Chuck and Nancy, right? That's who Donald Trump is. So we already knew that. And if you're a right winger, welcome to reality. It has a way of catching up with you. That's who Donald Trump is.
And look, there are people on the right who supported him vehemently, and now all of a sudden they are not so supportive. Ann Coulter wrote an entire book about how much she trusts him.
the title was "In Trump We Trust."
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it didn't work out so well. And you know, I was curious what some of the somewhat reasonable people on the right are thinking about what's going on. So I listened to Ben Shapiro's podcast on this issue,
no,
DACA specifically. And he actually made a lot of great points that I think some people on the right do subscribe to. Again, he doesn't have an ideology. He was a registered Democrat for decades. And then he's running as a Republican, but who is he really loyal to? Has he ever proven that he has thought through any of his positions, ever? Has he ever proven that he's thought through a tweet before he's tweeted it? He doesn't think through anything. To him, this was a power game, right? A power game that could potentially help him pay back some money that he owes to Russia, right? Now that's a little bit of speculation, let's keep it real. But this was never about caring about the American people or passing policies that he believes in as and is principled in. It's about power. And so he will go back and forth, and he is a wild card. We said it during the election, and he has proven to be a wild card. And if, you know, some Republicans were upset before, they will continue to get even more upset as he continues to throw some of them under the bus just so he can maintain his power.
And he didn't change his principles. He never had any to begin with. And so if you thought he was your friend, and a lot of people thought that right before they found themselves on the underside of
Jeff
a bus.
Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
He thought he was their friend.
Yep. Yeah. And now he's against Sessions and Steve King and Ann Coulter, and now Breitbart's calling him Amnesty Don. And the reason for that is he's like, well, it was evident that all I cared about was my ego, and now the Democrats are stroking my ego and you're not. So sad day for you.
So what, okay, there's another theory, but was mine that that he decided to cave on DACA, A, because of that he was upset. But do you think because this is so bad for the economy, right? Because I saw a statistic that said that in 10 years this will cost the economy $400 billion.
You think he cares about that? I don't think that was like the factor that changed his mind. No. He's like, oh, this is going to negatively affect our economy. Let me do something about
it. No, I don't think he, but I thought maybe business leaders that he was close with came down on him or something and said, hey, don't do this because of that. And this will look, it'll make you, and so he's like, oh, good, I can help out. I don't know, I think it had, I don't know.
He wouldn't know that fact if his life depended
on it. You're probably right about that. Yeah, who might, he doesn't know how much this is going to cost.
And business leaders are generally very pro-immigration reform.
Yes.
And look, right or wrong, and you guys could get mad at them whether you're liberal or conservative, but a lot of the business leaders think that Americans are lazy and not very competent. And so they want to go to the rest of the world and get talented, really hard driving, hard working people to work for less, whether they're immigrants working on farms or they're really smart guys working in Silicon Valley. So that could infuriate you, I hear you on that, and we should do something to fix that situation. But that's what business leaders think, and that's, so they're not, they're definitely for more immigrants, more immigration reform. So if they're putting any kind of pressure on Trump, it's bring more immigrants in,
right?
Not less. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we gotta go, next.
Yes,
next.
All right. The New York Times has just published an explosive piece in regard to the relationship between Donald Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Now, if you can remember, a couple months ago, Donald Trump was pretty vicious toward Jeff Sessions after he recused himself in the Russia investigation. However, more information has just been leaked to the New York Times by current and former Trump administration officials. And some of the details are amazing. It has to do with a confrontation that Trump had with Sessions back in May. And in that confrontation, Trump was incredibly insulting towards Sessions, and it led Sessions to send Trump a resignation letter. But what happened next? Well, let me fill in the details. So the president attributed the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller to Mr. Sessions' decision to recuse himself from the Justice Department's Russia investigation, accusing Mr. Sessions of disloyalty. Trump unleashed a string of insults on his attorney general. So what were those insults? Trump told Mr. Sessions that choosing him to be attorney general was one of the worst decisions he had made, called him an idiot, and said that he should resign. Now, this occurred in front of a number of administration officials. And some of those officials then went on to leak all of these details to the New York Times. And look, what I'm about to say is speculation, right? Steve Bannon was definitely one of them, right?
Like, I hadn't thought of that.
Bannon hates the fact that all of a sudden Trump is saying he's gonna do something to protect DACA recipients, right? And he loves Jeff Sessions. In fact, he was one of the people working with Trump trying to convince Trump, don't stop insulting Sessions, stop attacking him. You know what I mean? So
Sessions is super against immigrants, so agrees with Steve Bannon. Anna, that is such a great point, because the one thing I couldn't solve is, why did this story come out now?
Yeah.
Because it happened a while back, and there was a lot of opportunities for a lot of people to leak this story earlier, but they didn't. And because it didn't suit anybody's purpose. Now it suits someone's purpose.
Right, it suits his purpose. And remember, this story just broke a day after Trump announced that he reached a deal with Democrats in regard to DACA.
Steve Bannon sends his regards.
Steve Bannon.
Yes, that's a great point, Anna.
Tromsey. Okay.
Yeah, and look, think about it's about Donald Trump and why he's yelling at Sessions in the first place. And then we'll get into the heart of the insults, et cetera, and Sessions' reaction. Why is Trump this mad that Sessions didn't show loyalty by ending an investigation of Trump? Like, if again, would I go out of the path of legality and humiliate my own attorney general in front of everybody if there was an investigation about something I didn't do? But if I did it, and I know that it's going to wind up really, really poorly for me, I go, God damn it, Jeff, why did you recuse yourself? You were supposed to be loyal and end that investigation, right or wrong, legal or not legal. Mm-hmm. You're such an idiot. What he's saying is, you idiot, I didn't tell you I did it, but isn't it obvious I did it? You were supposed to be smart enough to figure out I did it and cover up for me. That's why I hired you.
It's amazing. Okay, so the next part of the story has to do with Sessions' reaction to getting insulted in front of all those people by Trump.
I heard the worst insult though was that Trump said he called him Granny from Beverly Hillbillies, and that really hurt his feelings.
That's funny because we put the title Sad Baby on this, right? And I'm going in the opposite direction. I think I'm starting to see he does look like a baby in some ways.
Yeah.
Right? Right, like baby boss or something, baby attorney general. Anyway, all right, go ahead.
So according to the New York Times, here is how Jeff Sessions reacted to getting insulted. Ashen and emotional, Mr. Sessions told-
Ashen. An emotional, sad baby.
Emotional snowflake.
Okay. Ashen and emotional, Mr. Sessions told the president he would quit and sent a resignation letter to the White House. And that's according to four people who were told details of the meeting. Mr. Sessions would later tell associates that the demeaning way the president addressed him was the most humiliating experience in his decades of public life. Trump ended up rejecting Sessions' May resignation letter after senior members of his administration argued that dismissing the attorney general would only create more problems for a president who had already fired FBI director and a national security advisor. Okay, and by the way, just to clarify who was present while Sessions was getting talked down to by Trump, Pence, Steve Bannon, the president's chief strategist at the time, and Reince Priebus, the chief of staff, all advised that accepting Mr. Sessions' resignation would only sow more chaos inside the administration and rally Republicans in Congress against the president. So these are all individuals who were either present while this was happening or were briefed on it and were part of the reason why Trump decided to not accept the resignation.
That further buttresses Anna's theory on Bannon, because that's Bannon bragging, I told him not to fire him. But the president's not that bright, and we had to barely get him under control before he did more damage to himself and to his administration. So look, you see us going back and forth and making fun of both Sessions and Trump when they're on kind of opposing sides in that particular case. So if you're wondering whose side we're on, neither. Okay, I love this fight. It's two guys who are totally wrong on many different things, and basically doing each other damage. Great, keep it up, Donald Trump. That's the kind of incompetence I could live with. And then finally, I'm amused by Sessions' reaction. Now, you might say, hey, come on, man, being upbraided by the president in front of everybody like that is so demeaning, and I get that it's humiliating. Like, they still don't get it. He's an idiot child. So if a child yells at me, I'm not like, oh my God, a 7-year-old humiliated me. I'm like, it's a 7-year-old, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry, I'll get you milk and cookies, right? And then you'll feel better. Does it hurt? I know it hurts. Don't worry, we'll get a boo-boo sticker on it. I wouldn't be ashen or emotional if Trump yells at me, I'd laugh in his face.
But think about the fact that someone like Jeff Sessions is willing to go through the humiliation of being Trump's attorney general just to latch on to that power? How pathetic is that?
And that's another great point. I would laugh at Trump. They wouldn't, because they're the guys who accepted Trump's offer.
Yeah.
They're the ones craving enough to seek that kind of power, no matter how humiliating it is.
Yeah.
So the guy who takes that job is the guy who gets humiliated by Trump and then goes back to his office. Okay, well, daddy yelled at me. Oh, you're both wonderfully pathetic.
All right, do we have time for one more?
We got to do the last one. I know, we got to do it.
Sean Hannity is, of course, defending Donald Trump's plan to cut taxes. However, he's a little concerned when Donald Trump makes statements indicating that he will not cut taxes for the wealthy, only for those in the middle class and the working class. And so in the next segment, he makes the case for why it's important to cut taxes for the richest Americans. Take a look.
He can't get trapped into this old thinking mentality. You know, Reagan slashed the top marginal rate in the course of his presidency from 70 to 28%. Revenues to the government doubled. 20 million new jobs were created. And that was after the 82 recession. I mean, it needed some time to get this thriving, and it worked. You know, it's simple economics, because those multinationals, those corporations, quote, rich people, well, what they're going to do is they're going to end up spending money and buying boats. And as Geraldo said yesterday, he bought a helicopter after the Reagan tax cuts. But that keeps people working.
What? Wait, so Geraldo buying a helicopter keeps people working?
Okay.
What?
Okay, so this is a preposterous argument to any rational person, but it really does work with the right way.
Yes.
They go, oh yeah, I mean, all the yacht makers, all of the yacht makers are in business. The helicopter makers, oh, they're making money hand over fist and employing people. That is a minuscule percentage of the economy. So if rich people get money, and it's not to say that, look, we got to find a rational place where taxes should be. It's not just to say, okay, there's no end to it, just tax the rich to infinity. But we've got to find the right balance. So how do we do that? So if you say, okay, I'm going to give more tax cuts to the rich, as Sean Hannity is arguing for there, because they will spend a tiny percentage of that on yachts and helicopters. But where do they put most of the money? They save it, which is nothing wrong with that. That's a rational thing to do, right? But that does not go back into the economy. Whereas if you get, whether it's tax cuts, subsidies, et cetera, to the middle class, which they don't do. Almost all the tax cuts that Trump has proposed is going to the rich, okay? Mm-hmm. And more importantly, to multinational corporations. They're not giving it. You're getting a payroll tax cut? No, you're not. Payroll tax is regressive. It's for the middle class. All they've done is increase the payroll tax, not cut it, because they want to shift the taxes onto you. So if you gave, in terms of whether it's the government doing it or you increase minimum wage, and that winds up allowing people who are working hard to make more money. If you're poor or middle class, the extra money you get, you have to spend almost all of it. Mm-hmm. So I would love for you to be able to save, but a lot of those folks are not in a position to save. So they spend it on food, books, shelter, clothing, etc. And what does that do? That goes back into the economy and it recirculates. And it actually creates a stronger and stronger economy. And the counter argument that we'll build enough yachts for the rich to improve the economy is laughable and preposterous. No economist in their right mind would ever think that if they weren't paid to think that. If there weren't think tanks funded by billionaires to come out with reports to say, oh yeah, yachts, the yacht industry is gigantic. Of course, that'll create all the jobs we need.
So can I just say?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the same kind of logic of, so if I'm in a car that goes off a cliff right before it hits the ground, I'll just jump up. It's the same kind of, it doesn't make any sense, it doesn't work, but it sounds like it makes sense when you first hear about it if you don't think about it. So what Sean Hannity is basically giving us is the rationale for trickle-down economics. And what trickle-down economics is you give all this money to the richest guy in the country, and then he's gonna spend so much of it, he'll employ all of us. But that's not how it works. First of all, as Johnny points out, it's like, oh sir, please, can I have a trickle? Can I have a trickle of your wealth? Thank you, sir. So that's what it lets the rest of us, turns us into. people who are begging for rich people to spend their money, but they don't spend their money. Because if you go watch that banned TED talk from that millionaire, he tells you that they can't buy all the stuff that jumpstarts the economy. They can only buy so many cars, so many pairs of jeans, so many houses, right? They take a lot of that money, as Cenk said, and they put it in savings, or they put it offshore and they put it in tax havens so it never goes back into the economy. If trickle-down economics worked, the middle class in America would be the richest people in the world right now. That's right. Because all the gains of the economies, the recovery from this economy in 2008 went to the upper 1%. And guess what? We have the biggest income inequality since before the Gilded Age. So if trickle-down economics actually worked, we'd all be doing great. The fact that we are all, half the country is poor or low income, 50% of all wage earners earn less than $30,000 a year, shows you that trickle-down economics is just a fantasy thought up by guys like Sean Hannity and pricks and think tanks, and it doesn't really work at all.
And they got their wish. They got George W. Bush. He did trickle-down economics. He did massive tax cuts. And what happened? They crashed the economy, and right before he left, it cost us 8 million jobs. It didn't create jobs. It destroyed jobs.
That's right. All right.
We got to go.
September, can I tell people September 18th? This Monday, I'm doing a live Jimmy Dore show in Burbank. September 25th, live Jimmy Dore show in San Diego. See you there.
Okay, well, tell them where they can find out about it.
JimmyDoreComedy.com, baby, or Verrett.com.
That's funny. Peter Dow's paying you money.
Peter Dow's got money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I finally got someone to pay me to sell out. It's fucking great.
Good job on working for Vermin.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
They have a point. They really do have a point.
Okay.
Bernie was a little hard on Hillary. Come on.
Come on. It was obviously his fault. So, look, we got to take a break here. When we come back, Ida Rodriguez is going to join us. And then all the stories are amazing. But one you got to check out is Facebook was apparently allowing people to buy ads to reach Jew haters. Amazing. We'll tell you about that when we come back.